as I learned mindfulness, I got to understand myself better because I kind of intentionally started looking at my own patterns. So I started recognizing the patterns that didn't suit me. And it was when I got to I don't know how to get any further with this, that I was like, oh, maybe I'll go and ask for some help and got therapy with that. So I had a better understanding of what it was that was making me sad, uncomfortable, angry, whatever, to be able to take that to a therapist and go, right, this is what's going on for me, and for them to then have the tools to go, ah, right, I see what's going on.
Welcome to Good Enough Counsellors, the podcast for growing our private practice without the pressure to be perfect. I'm Josephine Hughes, counsellor and creator of Therapy Growth Group, helping you to get the clients that you want and to build the private practice of your dreams. And in today's episode, I'm welcoming Liesl Laidlaw of Rewire Therapy. I first met Liesl when she joined Therapy Growth Group to grow her practice, and we worked together again last year as she developed her specialist course on mindfulness with people with ADHD. I'm really looking forward to hearing Liesl's insights about ADHD, CBT and mindfulness. Welcome, Liesl.
Thank you, loving being here.
It is great to have you here. And we're going to dive straight in because I think people find the combination of ADHD, CBT and mindfulness quite a surprising one, don't they? Because a lot of people who are neurodivergent don't like the idea of CBT, do they? And I don't know if you want to tell us a little bit more about how you bring all these parts together.
Sure, yeah. Look, there's no secret about it. A lot of people struggle with standard manualized CBT if they're neurodivergent. And the reason for that is that our minds do not work the same as the standard manualized mind.
Yeah.
And so unless the practitioner you're working with has a good understanding of neurodivergence and your specific type of neurodivergence, and you have a really good connection with that therapist, it's unlikely that standard CBT is going to do the job.
Yeah.
So if you're allocated a therapist and you don't have a choice about it, that makes it tricky. In private practice, that's different because you can go around seeing lots of different therapists for a free session, or you can pay for one session and see how you go. And if you feel like you've got a connection with that person, actually the type of therapy you're going to use matters much less. Still matters in some cases depending on what you're doing there.
Yeah.
But the connection is the thing that really makes the difference.
Yeah.
And the understanding of your neurotype by your therapist.
Yeah.
Otherwise, all they're doing is working from a book.
Yeah. So what sort of impact can it have on somebody who is ADHD, who's doing the sort of standard manualized CBT type approach?
I know from experience, because while I was training, part of the training was go and get some of these people who are ahead of you in training to CBT you so that you can know what it's like to be in the other seat. And no shade on the person who did it. They absolutely did exactly what they should have been doing.
Yeah.
But I felt very invalidated. Felt like, why is this not working for me?
Yeah.
And it made me even wonder about being a therapist, because I was like, well, if it's not working for me, how am I going to make this work for other people?
Yeah.
Because I don't have the experience of it working. And it wasn't until I understood later on, after I got qualified, that I was an ADHDer, that I recognized, oh, well, this, you know, the essence of this stuff is right.
Yeah.
But I need to apply it in the way that works for my brain. So instead of saying you should X, Y, Z, I started saying I could. I entertained myself with the possibility of what I might do, approaching, and this is where mindfulness comes in, approaching it with curiosity and kindness instead of, here's the plan, this is what you should do, and the outcome will be this within 6 to 8 weeks. Thank you very much.
So something around the should there that made it feel difficult, is that because it made you feel like you were failing, or what was it about it?
So you heard the should. Should, must, need to. All are demands.
Yeah.
And a whole load of people who are neurodivergent have a little bit of thing going on with demand avoidance, if you want to use the medical term, or you could be going with persistent drive for autonomy, PDA.
Right.
So you can say pathological demand avoidance if you want to go medical route, or you can go persistent drive for autonomy if you want to go social route. And if people like to have some autonomy, then telling them they should, they must, and they need to puts them right off the whole process, stops them being able to hear the next words that come out of your mouth, and makes them miss things that would be really helpful if they wanted to have a go at them.
Yeah. I mean, I haven't really had CBT myself apart from once. I had this therapist and she said, right, let's write down all these positive attributes or whatever. And let's pop them on and write them down. And then you have to read them out. She encouraged me to read them out to myself every day. And of course, you know, a piece of paper went into my handbag and I found it about 3 years later. Did any of it.
Yeah. And this is the thing. CBT encourages homework, right?
Yeah.
Let's imagine what the connotation of the word homework is with people who are neurodivergent, especially ones that are late diagnosed. Yeah. Your experience of school and homework will not be a joyful one. Well, it might be if you were a good girl and never got found out.
Yeah.
but homework can bring up all kinds of horror. So when people start with me, I say, look, we're going to agree, and it's probably going to be more you than me, what you would like to do in between sessions to move you towards the goal that we're setting here.
Yeah.
So that it's not just a once a week hour where we're talking about it. You get the opportunity to choose what you think. And my job is not to say, do more. My job is, in fact, to say, let's scale that back. Let me pull you back a bit, because it sounds like you're trying to do too much, which is making it less likely you're going to achieve something this week.
Yeah. I imagine, especially for ADHD people who tend to have a lot, sort of like a lot around them, a lot on them that might distract them, that having something else to do can feel like just too much.
Yeah. So this is why we're linking it to the thing they want to be doing anyway, right? And we're using examples in their life that's going to happen anyway. So homework might entail something like, if we've looked at thinking habits this week, we might go, well, now that you've seen these thinking habits and we've listed the ones that feel like you're using them all the time, how about like being a bird spotter out there this week? Having your list available if you want on your phone as a PDF or whatever. And when you spot it, going, aha, I see you. And you don't even have to tick it off. It could be just a mental thing where you recognize it and go, oh, look at me, I've spotted that.
Yeah.
We're not asking you to make any change whatsoever. We're just going, have a look, see what you notice.
Yeah.
Now it's a challenge. Now it's a game.
And make it so interesting. And employ that curiosity that so many ADHD people have, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And celebrate whenever you've spotted it, because the risk is people go, oh God, I've noticed all those thinking habits and they're all unhelpful.
Yeah.
That must mean I'm so terrible. And imagine, I don't think anyone else has as many as I have.
Mm.
Well, if you look at it like that, if we turn it into that, there's a likelihood it's going to put you right off. So I prime people before they get going. I use the Mario Kart game as an example. I go, imagine when you see one of those things in the wild, you get to be like Mario grabbing a coin as he's going along on the race.
Yeah.
So you can hear the little ding noise as you recognize the thinking habit. And then when we come back next week, we celebrate noticing how many of them you've caught.
Yeah.
Rather than you going, oh no, I'm going to have to go and tell her I saw all of these. Oh, this means that she's not going to want to work with me because I'm going to be such hard work. Well, no, that's not how it works.
Yeah. So I'm really interested, actually, because you said, you know, for you, when you were training, you had the practice and it didn't work for you. How did you manage to sort of square the circle in a way that, although it hadn't worked for you, that you still carried on training? Is it because you saw it working for others, or what was it that the process that went on?
Dogged determination.
Yeah.
I was doing this course and I was going to finish it and then I was going to use it. At the time, I didn't know I was neurodivergent. I just I couldn't work out why it hadn't worked for me. But I knew that I'd had therapy before that felt useful. And since then, I'd had therapy as well that felt useful. So I decided that I would incorporate the things that I knew worked from those other things into mindfulness and turn it into much more of an exploration of the person in front of me.
Yeah, so tell us a bit, Liesl, about how you discovered that you were ADHD. What was it that sort of helped you understand that yourself?
Yeah, so many of your listeners will recognise this path. Your child has some experiences that tells you they need a bit of support. So you go down the, well, let's check out with the doctor, let's check out with the diet, let's check out with all these other different things. And eventually they get referred to CAMHS. CAMHS went, okay, let's do all this assessment. And it turns out said child was neurodivergent of a different flavour than I am.
Yeah.
And as I was learning in a hyper-focused kind of way, yeah, notice anything there?
Yeah.
About how to know all about this type, this neurotype that my child was.
Yeah.
I was going to all the talks. I was looking at all the videos. I was doing all that. I was in one of those talks when the speaker relayed an experience of talking to a neurodivergent child when their mother had been standing there going, yeah, we always knew there was something wrong with her.
Mm.
And the speaker had gone to their knees and said to the child, there is nothing wrong with you. You are perfect as you are. The way you are isn't better or worse than someone else. It is just different.
Mm-hmm.
And that was painful to me.
Oh, wow.
I was sitting in the audience crying my face off,
yeah,
going, why am I crying about this?
Yes.
And it wasn't until I went to go and speak to the speaker and they said, well, you know, maybe it made an impact on you because there's something that you haven't recognized yet.
Yeah.
And I still went away sort of guffawing at myself, going, ha, 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 of course I'm not. But the more I looked at it, the more I recognized, yeah, all right, so this is my kid's neurotype, but here's some flavors that I recognize that definitely are ways to recognize ADHD.
And so with you, do you get people who already know their ADHD, or do you often get people who perhaps don't know but sort of tie in with the way you market yourself as working with sort of things like anxiety?
So my marketing is very much aimed at people who either know they've got ADHD or are exploring the possibility of it, or coming to terms with just recognizing that need.
Yeah.
And anxiety is one of those things that co-occur with ADHD a lot.
You go on.
For good reason, because, you know, if you've lived a life for decades believing that you're just not good enough and actually you should just work a little bit harder and then you will be, that's a fast track to burnout and being anxious the whole time, because you're just never going to measure up if you're trying to neurotypical your way through life.
Yeah.
And so anxiety is a natural outcome of living like that before you've recognized. So it gives us the kind of 1-2 to deal with. We need to recognize what the underlying thing is, which is I've never known myself for real. And the outcome of that is all this anxiety. So here's all the patterns I've built in all this time that makes me anxious regularly, so I can now find an antidote to that.
Yeah, yeah.
Now here's where mindfulness beautifully slips in the back door, because
yeah, go on.
Mindfulness helps us to find safety, security, comfort anywhere, because it's based in our bodies. There are caveats to this. People who have had physical trauma may struggle with finding peace in their body, and we have to take that into account when we're trying to offer mindfulness as a support. That's why it's really important, if you're going to go to a mindfulness course and you're in therapy, that you have a little chat with your therapist to understand whether that is the right time for you to join a mindfulness course, so that you can be safe doing that.
Yeah.
The mindfulness teacher will do the same, but not all mindfulness teachers are also therapists, so it's important to get that balance.
Mm-hmm.
So mindfulness helps us to, well, here's the definition, to notice what's going on in the moment intentionally and without judgment. Hard for ADHDers. How are you going to know what's going on? Well, there's 40,000 things going on, actually, and I can reel them off and then I'll forget what you asked me.
Yeah.
Mindfulness helps us to look at that vortex of thoughts going on in our heads and just pick one. Allow the others to be there, not judging them, not going, I picked this one because I don't like it, or I picked this one because I really like it. It teaches us ways to do that so that we can allow ourselves to direct our attention. And you can train your attention. You can train the prefrontal cortex, which is the bit that holds your executive function, by repeating exercises like mindfulness exercises.
Yeah. Is that hard for ADHD people? You know, the sort of concept of, you know, establishing a practice, doing a repetitive practice sort of day in, day out.
I said repetitive, didn't I? Yes.
Well, I don't know if you did, but I was thinking about it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, as soon as you hear repetitive, you go, routine, schmooting, forget that.
It's just, I just find it impossible to get into any sort of routine, which is why I ask.
Yeah. ADHD just forget to brush their teeth.
Yeah.
How the heck are they going to remember to do a mindfulness practice? It's reasonable to go with that. So consistency doesn't mean the same amount every day.
Mm-hmm.
It means regularly. Regularly could be four times the day, once tomorrow, nothing at all the next day, but then again the following day we're back to it.
Mm-hmm.
And in the same way as ADHDers can look after themselves, i.e. if you forget to brush your teeth today, well, don't give yourself too much of a hard time, because there's always tomorrow and you've still got teeth.
Yeah.
And the same thing applies to mindfulness. You can have another go tomorrow because you're still breathing.
Yeah.
that's where we have to give ourselves permission to do it our way. Because if you do it the way that standard mindfulness instructs you to do, you should be practicing every day. You should probably be practicing twice every day at the same time. And you should have a variety of practices you're going to do, or you're going to have the same one for a whole week so you can really embed it. If that doesn't work for you, where does that leave you?
And I think that's often the case, isn't it? And it's, I think it's often, I mean, even if you're not neurodivergent, it still can be quite difficult to establish, you know, a regular practice, can't it? So,
Life is busy. Find your own way. Don't be hung up by the rules. And now, look, we understand that the rules can feel hard to go round if you're neurodivergent. Depending on your flavour of neurodivergence, rules might really, really matter to you to keep you safe. So here's where we have to learn safety with making our own rules based on our own values, what's really important to us. And that's part of what we do when we're learning mindfulness. We start to trust our own judgment on what is going to be helpful to us and what is unhelpful. Choosing, again, selecting what we want to put our attention and our focus on and therefore our energy.
It's interesting, actually, because as we're talking, you know, I can sort of feel almost like a bit of a anxiety sort of rising up at the thought of establishing my own sense of safety. And I think it's sort of like, as somebody who finds it difficult to think of, say, rules, and, you know, you do these exercises, don't you, where people say, oh, what are your values? And you know, that sort of thing. I just think, oh, I don't know. Do you find this with people that, you know, that's
sort of
questioning?
The first time when I started learning mindfulness, I didn't know it was an ADHDer yet, and I wasn't a therapist yet either. They start off with this, so let's think about the benefits mindfulness can give you. Well, I went there because I needed some blinking peace in my head. That's all I knew. I hadn't made any other connections. It was an entirely selfish thing. I needed some stillness, please. I was getting that from that last bit in yoga. I think it's a Shavasana. When you're lying on your back and you're doing the breathing, there's probably music and whatnot. I was achieving that there, and I needed more of it. So I knew I went there with that. But in mindfulness, as you sort of settle into it, you get the opportunity to have a little think to yourself, well, what is it I'm trying to benefit here? And that was it. There was just one answer. And I felt like, well, sounds like there's more to it, and I really should have more than that. But if you're doing it with a teacher who is experienced, understands neurodivergence, and you're doing it in a group, it's much easier to get from that group that your experience isn't unusual. Because there will be other people who will say, do you know what? I came up with a blank, or I had one and I'm not sure it's right, or whatever. It's up to that mindfulness teacher to put everyone at ease to go, do you know what? Your way is perfect for you. If you haven't got an answer, 40 things that's going to be good for you, who knows what's coming? Let's explore. Let's see what you might get from this if you haven't already got the secure answer. But it does help if you go to mindfulness with an intention, the thing that you would like, and a good reason for why you would like it.
And for you, that was to find that sort of space in your mind to be able to rest.
It mattered to me because I knew that I wasn't getting any rest anymore. It was getting worse and worse for me to be able to get rest because I was an ADHDer in a world that doesn't get that. But if I didn't have that good reason, then maybe I wouldn't have been quite so dogged at trying again and again. That first mindfulness course gave me a sort of a taste of what could come, but it didn't click with me quite so well. I had to do a few before it worked for me.
So that's your determination coming out again, isn't it?
Hyper-focus. I'm going to do this. Watch me.
Because I think for many people, mindfulness feels like a really difficult practice to actually learn, doesn't it? Because, I mean, A, it does take a lot of practice, I think. That's one thing. B, I think there can be perfectionism. This is certainly what I found in me when I did my first mindfulness course. I mean, you did the body scan. And it was sort of like, you know, you listen to the meditation. It's sort of asking you what you feel in your toes or whatever. And I'm thinking, I don't feel anything in my toes. I must be able to feel something in my toes, you know.
And get
cross with myself because I couldn't feel anything.
Come on, Josephine, do better.
This real sort of perfectionism that sort of came out in me as a result of doing it. And I think the other thing is a lot of people think that mindfulness is about having a completely empty brain.
Try that as an ADHDer.
That's just not going to happen, is it?
No, it's not, which would very logically put people off, right?
Yeah.
There's no way I'm emptying my mind of all thoughts, whatever.
Yeah, I've got 50 million tabs open and yeah.
I know. So, yeah, perfectionism is something that comes along with a late diagnosis or recognition of neurodivergence, right? Mm. Because we've been trying our best to measure up, to pass for normative.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
When we're not.
Yeah.
And so when you are new to mindfulness, it's really important that your teacher understands that and does all the caveats going, what we're doing right now with a body scan, for example, is we're having a look to see what we notice.
Mm.
Not how much we notice or how well we notice, just mm-hmm. what. And we're practicing when we notice whatever we notice to allow that to be there. Not to wish it was different, not to wish it gone or better.
Mm-hmm.
And if we notice that, hey, another gold star, because I've just noticed that preference or resistance too.
Yeah.
And to help with staying focused, especially when we're doing the body scan, it can be a very abstract thing for especially ADHDers to go, right, so lie on your back and get yourself comfy and then put your awareness on your left big toe.
Mm-hmm.
What?
Which is what they do, yeah.
Yeah, like, okay, I don't know quite how you do that. Okay, and breathe into your legs. What?
Yeah.
So in order to make it a whole lot more practical, I suggest that people, if it suits them, if they want to, one of the options, to do it standing mm-hmm. instead of lying down.
Yeah, that's a bit different. It's a bit radical.
I know. Oh, tell me, there's more radicalness in this course. You just wouldn't believe it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And not only that, if you want to, touching the part that you're putting your attention on.
Mm-hmm.
We start at the head and we might say, so if you would like to, you could bring some touch to your forehead,
mm-hmm.
noticing what you're feeling there, noticing mm-hmm. what the sensation is like as you're touching your own forehead,
mm-hmm.
feeling both the hand and the forehead at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Well, guess what? Now you're genuinely thinking about your forehead and your hands. And this is the beginning of a course, right? So we're not at this point going, well, stop thinking. We're going, just experience what's going on. Mindfulness works like that. It's through experience that we learn mm-hmm. our new ways of being.
Mm-hmm.
Through experience, with a kind and experienced teacher, with a group also experiencing the same thing as you. When you do it with these apps, it's a bit like Duolingo.
Yeah.
You feel like you have to do it. And if you're not doing it right, well, why are you bothering? It's not the same when you're doing it with a group, because every week we come back and we discuss our practice and you hear from other people, you know, when this happened, I felt this, or I thought that, or I experienced this. And even if it's the only person in the room who's experienced it, we're all going, huh.
That's interesting. And yeah,
what did we learn?
Yeah, yeah. So I did my mindfulness course with a group,
mm.
and it was actually really encouraging and helpful to do that,
because
mm-hmm. like you say, there's that sort of group feedback, mm-hmm. and you sort of go back and, oh, I found this really difficult, and everybody else is saying, yeah, or you know, you fall asleep. Other people say, yeah, I fell asleep as well. That makes you feel a whole lot better.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the thing. This is why I specifically invite ADHDers to come together, because there's going to be a lot more overlap in that group
mm-hmm.
than there might be in an entirely neurodiverse, that means the whole population group.
Yeah.
Because you might have a whole, like if you had a bell graph, you'll have more neuronormative people in the middle. You'll have some people who are more autistic. You'll have some people more ADHD. There'll mm-hmm. be dyspraxia. There'll be dyslexia. There'll be all kinds of other bits of neurodivergence going on in there.
Mm-hmm.
And they're all going to come with their own experiences, which are valid.
Mm-hmm.
But there might not be anybody else coming up with that.
Right.
If
yeah.
you can't see it, you can't be it.
So you specifically limit it to people with ADHD or...
Yeah, people with ADHD, ADHD, as long as there's an ADHD-ness about you.
Yeah.
It's helpful to bring those people together so that mm-hmm. we can feel safe.
Yeah.
Because if you turn up and say, do you know, I never practiced this week, and you're honest about it, other people might go, I found it really hard, but I did, or here's what helped me, or whatever, right?
Mm-hmm.
It becomes more of a team effort to be kind to each other and ourselves.
Yeah, yeah. So it sort of really helps to be with other people who are similar. Yeah. What I was really interested in was just to ask what sort of feedback you've had from people who've been through mm-hmm. mindfulness for ADHDers.
Yeah, so I had people who were brand new to mindfulness, and I had some people who had an established practice, and somebody who'd sort of I don't want to use this word, lapsed, who had a practice and for whatever reason fell out of doing it regularly.
Yeah.
And the ones who had a practice before were very often saying, do you know what, that felt so freeing, so allowing of me being me, mm-hmm. giving me permission to try different things, mm-hmm. giving me a few options for each practice for how I might amend this for me, like a sort of menu rather than a you must experience.
Yeah.
A choice, an option. The ones that were brand new were coming away with, oh, do you know, I'm being a lot kinder to myself. The first introduction to mindfulness, the first 8-week course, mindfulness-based living course, is about getting the basics. Mm-hmm. There is a follow-on course which is about giving yourself more compassion, but we definitely start introducing compassion in this first course. Mm-hmm. And it made the biggest difference to me when I started turning all the compassion I was giving to other people, because I had tons of it for other people, mm. onto myself. Mm. That was itchy. It was really uncomfortable to start with, mm-hmm. but it made the biggest difference. And my course participants are giving me the same.
Yeah, they're
saying,
really,
do you know what? I'm a lot kinder to myself by the end of this course than I was at the beginning. Yeah. And that is one of those things we can carry with us. That's the safety we can grow. Mm. Whether we trust this body or not, we can be kind to it. We can go, this is how it is. I might not like it, but let's look at the suffering I'm experiencing and go, yeah, that is pretty rough, isn't it?
Mm.
In the same way as you might be with someone else if you were being empathetic. You would be sitting in the hall with them instead of going, here's a ladder.
Yeah, it's actually being with yourself and acknowledging how hard it is. So for you, mindfulness has made a real difference in your own experience of life.
Mm. Mm. Yeah. I learned it while I was working in change management in financial services, like mm-hmm. I said, because I'd got this little bit of inkling of peace from yoga. And it's what actually got me to the point to ask myself loads of hard questions, whether I was actually serving myself and my family with what I was doing. I was leaving the house at 5:30 in the morning and coming back at just before 7 if I was lucky, and then catching my 1.5-year-old just going to bed. It made me ask who I was serving with that. And I didn't have a very good answer for that. Mm-hmm. The people I was serving were shareholders, not the people I lived with. And that's what made me change direction. That's what made me choose, not only for that, but also for myself. What am I getting from this? How am I living my life in a way that suits me or doesn't suit me? Well, it blinking didn't suit me. I was trying my best to measure up with other people who had a different way of working than I did.
Mm.
Even though I had managed for long enough, it was getting to the point where I was just exhausted and anxious the whole time. And mindfulness gave me that opportunity to be kind to myself. It said, if you're falling asleep through a body scan, does it mean that you're not sleeping enough? And the answer was always, yeah, it means I'm not sleeping enough.
Yeah.
And so it wasn't until I gave myself the kindness of making sure I got enough sleep that I could get through a body scan without snoring.
So it sounds like for you, it was life-changing to do mindfulness.
Mm-hmm.
And it
Absolutely.
Put you on this path to become a therapist.
Yeah, it's made me a better therapist. It made me a better parent, made me a better partner, made me a better friend, and a better friend to me.
Yeah.
And I don't think there's many places you can learn to be a better friend to yourself that's as sustainable as this.
It's interesting, actually. So would you say that it's almost more beneficial than therapy for you?
Ooh,
that's a hard question.
Black or white. I'll answer with, it depends.
Yeah. Brilliant.
It really does depend, right? Mm. If you've got a whole pile of built-up trauma that's never seen the day of light and light of day, and nobody's ever discussed it with you or given you any ways of supporting yourself with you, it may be a good idea to understand that before you throw yourself into sitting still with your inner experience. It may be that if you're already in the process of having therapy for that there, it may be okay to overlap the two, but it's really important to check in with yourself. And this is part of the intake process when we start mindfulness, is people checking in with themselves. If you're right in the middle of a breakup and your mind cannot be with anything for more than a few minutes because everything that keeps coming back is the discomfort that you're experiencing in this breakup, be kind to yourself. Don't make yourself do something that's really, really hard in that moment.
Yeah.
There is an element of sitting with it in mindfulness, of being with the discomfort, so that we can learn to kind of push that boundary away a little bit more, so that we can understand ourselves better rather than trying to avoid discomfort.
Mm-hmm.
But don't do that when you're in the depths of it.
Mm-hmm.
If you've just had a bereavement, for example, what? No, be nice to yourself. Good. Cry a lot, buy more tissues, do whatever you need to do to be with that experience before you throw yourself into a brand new one.
Yeah, really interesting.
Yeah.
So, because I think some people object to mindfulness, don't they? Because they find it might upset them or something, but it's almost sort of sounds like they're probably not in a place for mindfulness at that point because maybe they've got some trauma work to do or something like that.
The other side is also true, which is why I was being so circumspect about my answer, not yes or no. As I learned mindfulness, I got to understand myself better because I kind of intentionally started looking at my own patterns. So I started recognizing the patterns that didn't suit me. And it was when I got to I don't know how to get any further with this, that I was like, oh, maybe I'll go and ask for some help and got therapy with that.
Yeah.
So I had a better understanding of what it was that was making me sad, uncomfortable, angry, whatever, to be able to take that to a therapist and go, right, this is what's going on for me. And for them to then have the tools to go, right, I see what's going on. It could be this or it could be that.
Yeah.
So it works both ways. Yeah. If you start mindfulness first, you might learn some stuff about yourself that would be useful in therapy. You might learn that you need therapy, or it may be that you don't need therapy at all. Mindfulness is just a way for you to understand yourself. And I probably wouldn't have needed half as much therapy if I knew I was an ADHDer.
Yeah. It's all part of that, isn't it? So just moving on now, I think people will be interested to hear how you combine mindfulness in your CBT work with ADHDers.
Okay, so I am an ADHDer, so there's some prep work I need to do to myself before each session, right? Otherwise, what's going to happen is I'm going to go into performative mode and talk throughout the whole session.
Yeah. So I'm laughing because that just sounds so much like me, yeah.
Yeah. And it's so easy to fall into it because now we're just having a conversation, right? And actually, and especially because if you've built a really good relationship with your client, there's a high chance that you can slip into that and just have a wee chat. As a good therapist, you're going to go and look at your last notes. You're going to get yourself ready for the session. And if you're an ADHDer, as I am, you don't have much time to do that between sessions because you've tried to fit in so many things.
Yeah.
Mindfulness has helped me to make sure that I put enough of a break in between sessions for me to be able to sit with myself and do some breathing. And because if I just say to myself, sit here and breathe, I'll be thinking about the washing machine and whether I need to buy blueberries and all that instead. So I make it practical for myself. So if you're listening to this, what I'm holding up right now is a mala. It's a bead bracelet. And I will count my breaths with this. Right. Instead of having to go count 1, 2, 3, 4 on the in-breath and count 1, 2, 3, 4 on the out-breath, which does my head in because I'm now using numbers and I am not a numbers person whatsoever. I will hold the bead like this between my forefinger and my thumb and I'll move my thumb up the bead on the in-breath and down the bead on the out-breath.
Yeah.
I've not had to do a single bit of anything apart from keeping myself attached to my breathing.
Yeah.
And once I've done that with all the beads around this mala, I've done it 21 times. Hey, I didn't have to count once, but I know I've done it enough. And by the end of 21, I usually feel a lot more settled.
Yeah.
And I've given myself space.
Brilliant. Yeah. And that just settles you ready for the session. You'll do that before you go into the session.
That's it. So then I'm just being again by the time I get to my next client, which benefits them because I'm not having to work through this whole get rid of what was going on in the last session, what do I need, all of that stuff, because I've actually already attended to that by the time I get to my next client. So it benefits them and it benefits me.
Yeah. If you're listening to this and thinking, I wish I could learn mindfulness from someone who actually gets how hard it can be when your brain won't sit still, you're in luck. Liesl is coming to Therapy Growth Group this August to run a special session on ADHD-friendly mindfulness for therapists. Whether you're neurodivergent yourself or just want to explore grounding practices that actually work in a busy therapy day, she'll be sharing the kind of techniques she uses to reset between sessions so she's fully focused on the client and not falling into performance mode. And we'll get to try them out together. If you're already in Therapy Growth Group, look out for the details. And if you're not, this is a great time to join us. Please continue to listen to this episode to hear about Liesl's full 8-week mindfulness course that's coming up later in the year. And then how do you use mindfulness when you're working with a client?
As in session?
Yeah. Do you train clients in mindfulness, or how do you bring it in, if you do indeed bring it in?
Well, I do bring it in. Can't help it. It's part of me.
Yeah.
And this is important for therapists, right? We bring ourselves into our sessions, so whatever's part of us will be there. But it completely depends on the client, and it completely depends on their needs.
Yeah.
So some clients will come with a ready-made mindfulness practice already that they may have learned in a way that isn't just so attuned to what they actually need.
Mm-hmm.
So we might amend that as part of, let's say they've decided they're going to meditate more because they know they feel more settled when they do. We might say, well, if you're going to meditate more, let's change it up. Let's make it a way that works for you, mm-hmm. because there's a reason you've stopped.
Yeah.
Make it easier for you. Maybe it's a different time. Maybe it's doing something more physical. Maybe there's more movement to be involved in it. Maybe movement associated with the breath. Mm. So, for example, you know, lotus hands, where you breathe in and you open your hand. When you breathe out, you close your hand. Mm. Again, the same thing as I was doing with the mala there. You're just associating a movement with the breath so that it doesn't have to be such a sole focus on the breath, which for some people can be tricky.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's adapting sort of traditional techniques to help people with ADHD to do it, yeah.
And because my clients often turn up with anxiety-related things going on, if I see a client turning up in a tizzy at the beginning, I will check in with them. We'll do the standard old CBT, what feelings are you feeling, and if you want to score them, we can, if that fits.
Yeah.
And then I'll say, right, could we spend a bit of time? How would it feel if we spend a bit of time with that feeling right now, by allowing it to be there as we arrive in this moment? So I might do a tiny little grounding practice with them.
Yeah.
So we're only taking up a few minutes, but it gives them practice to be safe with someone else. So we're co-regulating.
Yeah.
Which gives them the opportunity to recognize it doesn't have to take a very long time for this stuff to have a big impact. And it gives them a tool automatically to be able to go and have a go at this for themselves as homework if they want to, if it gave them benefit. So it depends on the client, right? Sometimes people will go, I've been doing these practices and they've really helped. Here's what I've learned. This is what I gained from them. And then we have a new starting point for next week's discussion.
Yeah.
When they come back, they go, oh, right, this is what I learned. And I go, right, excellent. So where do we take that? What do we do if we combine this with your intention, with what your goal was?
Do you find people come to you because they like the idea of ADHD and mindfulness? Or do you find people, say, come to you around ADHD and anxiety and a little bit resistant to the idea of mindfulness?
Both.
Yeah.
Some people come because they reckon they're going to be able to get a bit of extra that they wouldn't get from a different therapist.
Yeah.
I.e. there's the mindfulness element. Who knows what I might offer in session? Or they've already got a practice and they really quite resonate with that.
Yeah.
So some people turn up knowing or thinking they might be an ADHDer, but basically, you know, say, get ye behind. I don't want any of that mindfulness near me. And, you know, while I respect it when people say that, I don't force mindfulness on anyone.
Yeah.
Mindfulness is so ingrained in what I do that I might not be saying, sit still for 5 minutes and feel your feelings.
Yeah, but
I might be asking you about your physical sensations and bringing in mindfulness kind of questions.
Yeah.
In the way that you check in with yourself. Checking in with yourself, which is part of CBT, is basically what you're doing in mindfulness. You're just bringing your awareness internal.
Yeah.
You're bringing it into yourself instead of making it all about external sensations.
Yeah. It's really interesting, isn't it? Because what it sounds to me as though you've done is you've taken the sort of CBT and mindfulness principles and really integrated them together.
Yeah.
So it's sort of like a holistic approach, because this is who you are, but you've made those CBT principles perhaps work with a mindfulness flavor, I suppose.
Yeah. As I was training and I started understanding more about CBT, I did actually go up to a trainer one day going, so let me just get this right. Mindfulness is this and CBT is this. Do they overlap?
Yeah.
And there was a resounding yes.
Yeah.
And I'm glad that I got that confirmation at that stage, because it gave me permission to observe where I could combine the two. It's important that when I'm doing one, I'm not doing specifically the other. So, for example, when I'm doing mindfulness with a class, it's a completely different dynamic from working one-to-one with a client with whom I have a contract, with whom we have an agreed goal and safety in place.
Yeah.
When I'm working in a mindfulness class, do not be concerned that I'm going to be therapizing you.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
in front of everyone else, right? That does not happen. We make sure that when we're working with mindfulness, we're bringing ourselves embodied into the moment. In other words, this body, this experience is all that's going on right now. Mm-hmm. I might bring in some tiny little tools from CBT that's generic that people can really use to help themselves understand what's going on. Mm-hmm. There's even a tool in there that's from compassion focused therapy from Professor
Paul Gilbert.
Thank you. Paul Gilbert.
I'm quite a fan, yeah.
Yeah, I'm a fan, except I can't remember his name.
Yeah. Well, that's another thing to talk about in a moment, is menopausal stuff. Yeah, go on.
Oh, let's go there next.
Yeah.
Where I might talk about the emotional drive states and how that affects our life, and, you know, how our minds have developed through evolution to keep us safe.
Yeah.
But not happy.
Mm.
Our minds won't automatically make us happy. We need to work at that, which is why we have to keep in mind that if we're working on mindfulness, we're working towards giving ourselves the opportunity of a bit more happiness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So should we talk a bit more about menopause? Because that's another sort of area that comes up, isn't it, in the work that you do?
Mm-hmm.
I think often it's when women hit menopause,
mm-hmm.
that's when it can really be noticeable that they've got ADHD.
Mm-hmm.
It's sort of like you've coped and masked up until that point, but the menopause just sets you off, doesn't it? And into a completely different place.
Mm-hmm.
So menopause comes into your work as well, doesn't it?
It does. And it really does come in by the back door. If we look at the demographic of the people who are going to turn up undiagnosed or newly diagnosed, late diagnosed, they will be people who at this point could be anywhere between, let's say, well, women, adult women. No, let's be more inclusive. Adult people with uteruses will turn up somewhere between the age of 20 and 45,
mm-hmm.
having never known their neurotype, having had PMDD every month for a lifetime, having had major emotional difficulty associated with their cycles, and having not necessarily anywhere to discuss that, because not, you know, women are still not talking about their periods very much. We could do a lot more of that. In perimenopause, the hormones start bouncing up and down, but the trend tends to be down.
Mm-hmm.
And estrogen has a heck of an interaction with how we are able to access dopamine. Dopamine is the hormone that helps us get stuff done and also makes us feel like celebrating when we got the thing done.
Mm-hmm.
If you can't access your dopamine, you're going to sit on the sofa and lose days. And if you've managed to build yourself a career, for example, at which you have excelled until now, and suddenly your estrogen drops
mm-hmm.
for natural reasons, but now you don't get why, you don't get your motivation up anymore, and you can't stick to things as long as you used to, and all that sort of stuff, then that's going to bring difficulty into your life anyway. But for ADHDers in particular, we run on dopamine. We need dopamine to do anything.
Mm.
We need a tiny bit of it to just prime an action. Then we need a bit more of it during the action. Then we need some when we celebrate it after, so that we have continuity. If you haven't got enough estrogen, or your estrogen's up and down, you have no idea where your dopamine's coming from next, which can really affect how you feel about yourself and the world around you. And so finding ways to maintain our hormone levels through natural or medical ways makes a big difference to how we can then add on ways of leveling out our dopamine levels for ourselves.
Yeah. And presumably this is something that sort of being mindful can help you with.
So mindfulness is basically a check-in.
Mm.
Mindfulness is checking in with your body. What sensations am I noticing right now? Whether I like it or not,
mm-hmm.
whatever's there.
Mm-hmm.
What thoughts am I noticing? Okay, I notice these thoughts, and I've seen that a lot of times before. Here's a pattern I can make. What emotions am I noticing? And the more we check in with ourselves, the more we get to know our patterns, the more we get to know when something's off, the more we get to recognize when there's something we could do, or we need to do, or we'd like to do to make things easier for ourselves.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so you're going to notice, if you're mindful, you're going to notice throughout your cycle how your emotions change, and how a couple of days before your period, I have a client who says they become hormonicidal.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's gonna give you that insight, going, oh, this is the hormonicidal day. So maybe if I was being kind to myself, I wouldn't organize serious social stuff on that day when I'm really gonna feel like not being with people.
Yeah, and it's just noticing and allowing, in a sense.
allowing our own needs to be there and taking care of ourselves in a compassionate way, in the way that you would for someone else.
So just a sort of few questions to just sort of bring things to a close. What's one piece of advice that you give to therapists who are starting to work with ADHD clients and not quite sure how to adapt?
Do as much research as you can. And research isn't just what it says in all the journals at this point, because research is still catching us up. So you could research on Facebook. You could join a group. You could learn about people's experiences from the people experiencing them, or learn all the journals, read all the journals, go on every course you can find, and recognize the needs that you're going to need to attend to in the way that you usually do your therapy, so that you can recognize where you can adapt. Also, if you've met one ADHDer, you've met one ADHDer.
Yeah.
Do your very best to deal with the to work with the person who's right in front of you by asking them about their experience. And be aware, they don't necessarily have a ready handbook to give you to go, well, I have misophonia, so I really struggle with your mouth noises as you're speaking into the mic. I really struggle with some texture, so if I'm wearing this jumper, I'm going to be tetchy. That stuff, they don't necessarily have that yet to tell you. It's your responsibility to find out what their flavor of ADHD is from them, as much as they can give you in the moment. It's an exploration together. Sometimes people know exactly, and if they've had a diagnosis, they'll have a spiky profile that tells them, here are the traits that I'm most likely to have and exhibit. If they don't, or if they're self-recognized, they might not have the full story with that, and it's your job to work with them to work out how all that stuff, well, what's there and how it affects your therapy with them. Be open to learning as you go, without making your client a curiosity. Be open to learning from your client as you go, because every new ADHDer is going to teach you a new thing. Be also aware that if you are not ready, you may not be the right therapist for this client. There are people who work specifically with ADHDers, and it would be a much comfier fit for that client if they work with someone like that. If you don't feel quite ready yet, there's a balance to be struck there. We know that feeling good enough is often something therapists struggle with. So push it a little bit if it's safe, if you know that you've got the basics right, if you've discussed it with your supervisor. Make sure that you start off with a foundation of understanding and then push yourself a little bit to learn. But if you haven't got the foundations of understanding yet, until you do, pass them over to someone who does.
Who can really help them, So I was wondering, what's been the most rewarding part of developing a therapy approach that honours neurodivergence?
I have fun every day. Do you want to know where my dopamine comes from?
It's just really sort of interesting and engaging to work with people with neurodivergence.
Josephine, this is what niching does. So if you ever wanted to bring something into your niching course, this is it. It mustn't work for us, must not feel like a drudge. Work for us must feel, for ADHD specifically, must feel like something you're excited about getting up for in the morning. People are bringing us tough stuff. They're talking about sad things. But also, you can see that connection you make with someone going, oh, do you know, I am one of the 3-5% of people in the UK who exhibit what I'm exhibiting. And even in that group, I'm still a minority because we're not all the same. And here's a person who gets what I'm saying, who even asks me the things I'm thinking before I've said it. The number of times clients say to me, stop reading my mind. I'm sorry, I haven't. All I'm telling you is lots of people experience this at this point because of this.
It's an educated guess, isn't it?
It's an educated guess. I never go, I know you're doing this. I usually go, well, lots of people at this point would be thinking this. How much of that is going on for you? And then they go,
And it's just, I think that's just so comforting for clients as well, because you do feel like your experiences. So, you know, you're the only person in the world who's going through what you're going through, because somehow you're uniquely bad or wrong or whatever it is. And so when someone sort of affirms what you're thinking or feeling and saying, well, you know, people I've worked with before, or, you know, that sort of stuff, it just really makes you feel so much less alone, doesn't it? And it aids that connection, I think.
And for me, I mean, this is entirely selfish. I get to spend all day with lots of ADHDers.
Yeah.
Which means I feel in my tribe every day. It's fantastic.
Yeah, which is great, isn't it? Yeah. So tell us a bit more about your mindfulness course, because obviously you've sort of touched on the fact that you offer it. But
yeah.
Tell us, is it an online thing that you do, and how do people find out about it?
Yeah, there's a lot of questions, Josephine, but I'll tell you all of them. Okay, so I offer a mindfulness course for ADHDers twice a year, early in the year, and the next one will be in September. The course is online. We do it for 8 weeks at a time, and we do it for 2 hours at a time. Now, I hear the ADHDers running for the hills at this point, but 2 hours, are you certain? But I know my people, and we have several breaks. We do things in little sections. We have breakout bits. People have the choice about whether they attend the breakout bit or not. Mm-hmm. We give options at every corner. I suggest that if, as certified ADHDer, you need to have 3 drinks with you, go on, bring them, the hot one, the cold one, and the fizzy one.
Yeah.
bring them. If you use sensory tools, if you have a fidget of some kind that gives you comfort, bring it. Mm-hmm. If your cat is that fidget tool, bring it.
Yeah.
Do it in your gym jams if you like.
Yeah.
Make sure you're covered. Do it in a place that feels right to you.
Yeah.
Okay. So anyway, I think I diverged a little bit there. Is that unusual?
Yeah. No, I mean, it's so, you know, it's very much designed with ADHD people in mind. This is what you're telling me.
Totally. Yeah.
Yeah. And how do people find out about it?
So you can go to my website, which is all the W's, rewiretherapy.co.uk.
Yeah.
The course itself is, you sign up for the 8 weeks. We meet on a Thursday night. We go for 2 hours. We'll do a set agenda every time, so you know where you are. You have checkpoints in each of those agendas, so you can get where you're going. Mm-hmm. Some people attend without ever having their camera on. That's okay. If that feels like the right thing for you to do, fill your boots.
Yeah.
Let's have a chat about it before we do it so that we understand what your needs are.
Yeah.
Part of signing up for the course is filling in a questionnaire that checks in with you if you're ready for this, or if there's anything I need to know about your needs or your expectations. I also have another therapist who attends with me, so that if someone's feeling emotionally overwhelmed, it means there's someone who can give them attention in that moment if they wish to have it, while I continue with the class, so that it doesn't halt. You don't have to feel like when you're overwhelmed, this is an issue and you need to just log off now. You get some safety if you want it with another person in that moment.
Yeah. That's fantastic. Liesl, thank you so much for coming along. I'll make sure that the links are in the show notes for anybody, you know, who'd like to follow it up. And thanks so much for coming and just explaining so much about mindfulness and how we can build it into our lives so that, you know, we are aware of what's going on and learning to be, to sort of be with it and to be kind to ourselves. So that's been brilliant. Thank you very much.
I really appreciate it. And look, if you're a therapist and you're interested in mindfulness and you just want to ask me some questions, I do lots of networking with people, especially folks who support other ADHDers. Let's have a chat about that if that feels right to you.
Fantastic.
And we can work out what's going to be right and helpful to you.
Oh, that's brilliant. Thanks so much, Liesl.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening. Do come and join my Facebook community, Good Enough Counsellors. And for more information about how I can help you develop your private practice, please visit my website, josephinehughes.com. If you found this episode helpful, I'd love it if you could share it with a fellow therapist or leave a review on your podcast app. And in closing, I'd love to remind you that every single step you make gets you closer to your dream. I really believe you can do it.